What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bomb City Locker Room Talk Podcast. You're listening to episode 160. As always, I'm Jim.
I'm Adrian.
You got the cowbell out tonight.
Yeah.
We're back. It's been over a month, but we're back.
Lots of shit has happened.
A lot of stuff's happened. Football season has started. We're in the thick of it right now. Week 5 in the college football season, NFL. You went to a NFL game. We'll get into that in a minute. But first of all, we got to get into some of the games that have happened recently. We got a big game coming up next week with two of our teams, OU and Texas. And Texas dropped one today.
Yeah, that wasn't surprising. Gators.
I want to know, like, your opinion on what's going on with Arch. Is it a combination of things? Do you think it's more mental, his psyche, offensive line play, play calling? What's going on?
I think it's a combination of all of those things that you mentioned. The play calling's not there. Arch just seems like he's lost. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to explain, but it feels like and looks like he's just not ready. Like we thought he was. You know what I mean?
Surprising, yeah.
You figured sitting on a bench for 2 years that your third year you'd come in and you'd be ready to take over, but it doesn't look that way. I mean, when he takes off out of the pocket and you know, runs on his own, he looks freaking great, you know. But when it comes to throwing the damn ball to a receiver, you know, it's just not there, you know. Our defense is great, you know. They didn't look too great today, but especially against the run. And I can't speak for the whole game because I got pissed and I stopped watching it at halftime. So I didn't even watch the third or fourth quarter. So
yeah, I watched all of it. Arch, he does hold on to the ball a little bit too long when he's in the pocket. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a lot of pocket awareness.
Yeah.
And when he throws from the pocket, it's usually inaccurate. He made some good throws, though. But more than not, he just couldn't connect. In the second half, he played a little bit better when he was out of the pocket and on the move. He made some throws down the field. So he did look better, but he got sacked way too many times. And it's a combination of bad O-line play and him holding on to the ball a little bit too long, kind of like Jackson Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, Saxon Arnold now because he's getting sacked, you know, 6 to 10 times a week. But looking forward to next week, I don't care what Texas' record is. I don't care what Oklahoma's record is. You know that game is unpredictable. And either team, no matter how their season is going, can gain a lot by winning that game. A bad Texas team walked into Dallas and beat OU with Tyrone Swoops and Gerard Hurd. Remember that?
Yeah.
And Charlie, what was his name, the head coach? Strong, yeah.
Charlie
Strong went in there and beat Bob Stoops. And then a couple years before that, in 2013, Texas beats a decent OU team by 16 points.
Mm-hmm.
So that game to me is like one of the best games of the year in college football. And for me, it's like a holiday, like the whole week leading up to it, the game itself, it just has a different feel. There's a lot of emotions on the line. There's a lot of investment by both fan bases. And like I said, it's not going to come down to, you know, who has the better record. It's going to come down to who wants it more, who can be the most physical football team in the trenches, and who can run the football.
Yeah.
And right now, we haven't ran the football very well. Texas hasn't either. OU and Texas both have a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
I could see this game being a very low-scoring game, especially if John Mateer doesn't play. And we won't know if he plays until kickoff at 2:30 on Saturday. But I can see Arch, they can scheme up some things for him and he can be successful. But I guess let's go ahead and just predict how we think that's going to go.
OU's going to win, bro. Just stop it. They're going to win.
That's the emotional take, right? You know, an hour after the Texas-Florida game. But, hey, like I said, I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a close game.
I think OU's going to blow them the fuck out of the water.
I don't see a blowout. I don't. With Texas, I think they're going to come in hungry. They're going to come in motivated, and that's the last thing I wanted coming into this game.
I don't think so. Sarkisian is not the type of dude that is hyping this team up. That's what they need. They need somebody to hype them up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think Sark needs to go. I just don't think Arch is the guy.
I'm surprised he stuck with them for four quarters. The backup had to come in the fourth quarter because Arch lost his helmet. The backup played one play and completed a long pass. And with the penalty at the end of the play to tack on 15 more yards.
It's all about fucking money now. You know, you're not gonna. It's just like the NFL, right? You're not gonna bench your quarterback that's making $50 million a year, right? There's no way you're gonna bench a dude making that kind of money. Arch is making, because of his name, is making a lot of NIL money, and he's drawing. I mean, Texas is gonna be Texas no matter who's playing quarterback. But I mean,
do you think there's pressure
with that Manning name? You know, like it's on a whole nother level.
Think that's the reason why Sark is afraid to bench him, because of the investment, the hype?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Who his uncles, who his grandpa are, like, do you think that's a factor?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. Bench a Manning?
Mm-hmm.
Bro? Like,
I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be fine. He's going to, like I said before the season started, he was going to go through some growing pains. He's going to have a rough year. Maybe they'll go 8-4. Maybe they'll go 7-5. But next year is his year. Next year is the year to put it all together. I think they'll be damn good next year.
We'll see.
he needs a year of having a bad taste in his mouth. We've had to bench quarterbacks in the Cotton Bowl. One year it worked out extremely well when we benched Spencer Rattler for Caleb Williams. Remember that game?
Yeah, I remember that game very well.
Texas was up by 18 points at the half and came back and shocked the world. And like I said, like, even having a big lead in that game is not safe. Mm-hmm. It's not safe. So I see Oklahoma.
Was that the digger, the kicker game?
No, that was 2018. So that year, Kyler brought OU back and tied the game up with like it was a little over a minute. And then Texas went down and got on the fringe of field goal range, and they kicked that game-winning field goal. That game almost swayed the other direction, and Texas was in control of that game the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's going to be lower scoring this year. I'm saying maybe 21-13 OU. Texas is going to come in motivated. They're going to come in pissed off. And when you have a team that has nothing to lose and everything to gain, because if they win this game, everything else is in front of them still. They're a two-loss team. If they can win the rest of their games on their schedule and beat Georgia, beat A&M, beat Mississippi State, they're right back in the playoff hunt. They'll get in the playoffs if they win and run the table. So they have a lot to gain by beating Oklahoma, especially OU hasn't been this highly ranked in a long time. I need to go back and check and see when the last time they walked in the Cotton Bowl in the top five. It's been a minute. So this could be a regular, ordinary OU team where they go in, a lot of hype, and then they lose to Texas and they end up, you know, having a good season but fall short of expectations. Or this could be a special team where they get over the hump, take care of business in a game where they should win, they're favored to win, and they go on and make a run. They have every tool in their arsenal to go make a run this year, but they have a tough schedule on the back end. They've got, you know, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, LSU, and South Carolina. So they got to win this game. But it's going to be a fun week, fun game. We're going to do something, right? Saturday?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have a little
small
watch party.
It's a tradition. It's almost like we have to do something, you know? Like, I don't think we've ever gone a year. I think last year we didn't get together because I think you were out of town.
Yeah, I was in the mountains.
But, I mean, other than that, I mean, we get together every year. We've gotten together every year since at least 2015 that I can remember. So the last 10 years we've gotten together and watched this game. So I don't think
it's a tradition for sure.
This year won't be any different. So
yeah, we'll do wings. You want to do seafood boil now. What are your thoughts on everything that goes with that? I think it's a little bit too much to put together. You know, I know you said the expenses would be a little bit too much.
Well, the seafood itself is expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Seafood's expensive, just like meat, right?
Right.
You know, shrimp's expensive. Crab legs are expensive.
You do sausage, you
know?
Too.
But I think if you find somebody, you know, with like a good Sam's membership, you could probably find some good deals at Sam's. But I mean, like everything else, like all your vegetables and stuff that you throw in there, that's going to be cheap. Seasoning is not going to be bad. I mean, I bought that new pot.
You want to use it.
and I want to put it to work, you know.
I
got it a few weeks ago and it's just been sitting in my kitchen ready to get used. So because, you know, one thing that I like to watch on like my Facebook reels is seafood boils, crawfish boils, all the Cajun stuff.
Oh,
right?
I love
and
Cajun
so,
food, yep.
That's the reason why I bought that pot, because I'm like, I've watched so many videos that now I want to do it.
Adrian, I have a Sam's membership. I'm off Thursday, Friday. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can coordinate a time we can go up there and see.
Yeah, for sure.
We can get some stuff together.
Yeah, for sure.
What would be like your go-to, like if you could plan out and go to a game and tailgate, what would be your like dream tailgate spread?
Tailgate spread, probably just barbecue. You know what I mean? Some ribs, maybe pulled pork, brisket, maybe even. Of course, you'd have to have that already made before you get over there. But I would say any kind of barbecue would be good. I know when I went to the game last Sunday. My sister's best friend, her husband, he had smoked a pork butt, and when we tailgated for the game, that's what we ate was some pulled pork sandwiches. Somebody else brought like a chicken salad, you know, it's just stuff that's easy to eat without having to use utensils. You know what I mean? So
barbecue's a good choice, and for those who don't know, Adrian went to the Green Bay and Dallas game, which ended in a tie. We'll get into that. I'm sure that atmosphere was crazy. Just experience a tie. That's rare, you know?
Yeah.
That is very rare. But I'm sure you ran across some good tailgates, right? How would you rate the tailgating scene there?
The tailgating, which, of course, you know, this is my first time at AT&T Stadium, and you know they've got multiple different parking lots. But my sister, we're just gonna call him Donnie because that's his name, Donnie. So Donnie is married to my sister's best friend. They've all been friends together for probably around 20 years, if not longer.
Sweet.
So Donnie, he's an avid Cowboys fan, season ticket holder. He's also an avid Rangers fan.
Gotcha.
So he does a lot of tailgating. He actually owns his own tailgating trailer, which is really neat. It's all like decorated with, we'll just say memorable scenes of Cowboys and Rangers history. Like, for example, one of the scenes on there is Rudy Odor punching Jose Bautista in the face.
Classic.
It's a classic Rangers moment that'll probably live in Rangers history forever. So he's got this trailer, and he's got like a group of friends that they basically tailgate with, you know, every other weekend for the Cowboys games. I don't think he goes to every single game. I think he goes to like most of like the big games, like obviously Cowboys and Packers. That's a big game. That's a rivalry.
Yes. A historic rivalry.
It's a rivalry for sure.
Since the 60s.
So, obviously they were at that game. But when we pulled up to the parking lot, like it was packed. Like, you know, there was a lot of people there, Cowboys fans and Packers fans there tailgating. You know, people are playing music, they're cooking, barbecuing, you know, dancing, you know, just having a good time, you know, and that's what we were doing too. They were having a very good time. They were having such a good time that there's some things that I can't, that they were doing that I can't mention.
Repeat or mention.
That, yeah. I can't mention on this podcast because they may or may not be illegal. So,
right.
So I can't.
Hey, that's when you know you've experienced a quality tailgating.
Yeah. So it was pretty awesome. And you know, his trailers is set up with some TVs, mm-hmm. and stuff. So we were watching some of the, I think we were watching the Eagles and Buccaneers game. He's got like this dispenser in his trailer that dispenses like whatever kind of liquor that you want. Rum. It had a button for rum. It had a button for tequila, a button for vodka, button for whiskey, whatever you wanted. You would just go up, push the button to whatever liquor that you wanted, pour it in your cup, and you know, make you a mixed drink, you know.
Convenient.
And then he had a big Yeti cooler, you know, that was full of beer, and he had some speakers set up in the trailer as well. He's a big Van Halen fan, apparently, so he was just bumping Van Halen like that's the awesome. Whole time. So I guess that's like his game day tradition, is just bumping Van Halen.
Hey,
so.
Blaring some right now, right before the game, man. That song gets you going.
So yeah, it was pretty neat. It was really cool to get to experience that. Mm-hmm. They go pretty hard.
You know, that's one reason I bought that converted truck bed that has a camper on top, to use that not only for camping but also tailgating,
mm-hmm.
to transport all my stuff to tailgate. I can put tables. I can put TV in there. And I painted it, you know, to match my Sooners crimson. And it's just something that I want to do down the road. Haven't gotten around to planning it out, but in the future, I'm definitely going to go take it tailgating.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing that I would like to do if I own, like, but I need to own, I've always owned a car, right? You can't tailgate with a car. I mean, you could, but it'd be kind of weird. Like, I want a truck. I need to get a truck so that I can start tailgating, because I would be really awesome at it, because you already know how get down on the grill.
You do need a truck.
So you already know how
a little
I get
bit worse
down on
gas guy mileage, but
yeah,
for what you like to do, it'll serve you well for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into the game though itself. You were sitting. Were you sitting in one of the corners?
Yeah, corner. I was sitting in one of the corners by the end zone. I was sitting actually right under Jimmy Johnson's name on the Ring of Honor. That's where our section was. That's the best that I can describe it, because I mean, you've got four corners of the end zones and they all look the same. So I was sitting in the corner of the end zone.
You didn't
had a pretty good view.
You weren't sitting in the corner where the fight was, were you?
I think that was a little bit more above us in the poor people section.
Okay, yeah, I got that, you. That, and that's where the nosebleeds. I sat. Okay, I wasn't sitting in a corner, but I was in a nosebleed the one time I went to a Cowboys game, and we played Philly on Thanksgiving, got our ass whooped in 2014 with Joseph, but we were sitting there at the top. And really, I feel like there's no bad seat in that stadium.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, especially with that screen.
Unless you're fighting for a spot to stand, if you're in that standing section.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you've got to kind of run to that spot, and you got to save a spot and don't let anyone get in front of you. But
yeah,
the screen does serve a great purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to see replays. You're able to see anything you maybe missed.
I kind of didn't like it. I mean, I did and didn't.
It does take your attention off,
I feel
right?
like it distracted me from what was actually happening onto the field. And I think it's because, you know, my very first NFL experience was at Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the very first game I ever went to in the NFL. It was Packers versus Chiefs at Arrowhead back in 2011. And, you know, Arrowhead is a very old school stadium, right? And so watching the game in Dallas, it was very, very different. I mean, it was cool to see the board, but I do feel like it was a little distracting as far as what was going on the field. But not too bad. I mean, it was still very cool. That stadium, man, it's fucking breathtaking. I'm just going to say that. It's
a marvel, isn't it?
It's it's one thing to watch it and see it on TV, but, you know, when I walked, as soon as I walked into the door, I was just like, wow. Like, this is freaking amazing.
Now,
like, I was,
now you know why there's so many events at that place.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was like, now it all makes sense, right? Now it all makes sense. I said, this is immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, they have that shit on lock. Like, you ain't getting into no fucking section without no ticket, without verifying that you got a fucking seat there. Like, they ain't letting people, you know, roam around and go sit in empty seats and shit like that. Like, you gotta show your ticket every single time you go to your seat. And then, so they have that shit on lock. It is also very expensive. That was the only other thing I didn't like.
What would you say could or should improve as an NFL fan? First and foremost, it's an NFL game.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think should improve to make the experience a little bit better for fans?
Prices,
number one.
Jesus, like, I paid $80 for four drinks. And one of those drinks, mind you, was a bottle of water.
You hear that, NFL? Lower your shit. That's insane.
It is insane. It's fucking highway robbery, man.
It is. It's the average fan cannot enjoy or spend, you know, an honest amount of money there. It's over the top.
Yeah, it's greed. Completely over the top. Yeah. But I mean, it's going to be like that in any sporting event, sporting venue. So yeah. I mean, I was expecting it. I was expecting high prices, but not like that. You know what I mean? That really, I was like, holy shit. Like, when she told me my total, I was like, what the fuck?
It makes you, like, not want to go back.
Yeah.
If they made it more affordable middle class, working class.
Yeah. It's a good thing we walked into the stadium. I walked into the stadium already fucked up.
Right. That's how you,
because I
it.
Had my own cooler.
You've got to do it that
with,
way.
With all my drinks in the back of Donnie's truck. So I was like 9 ultras deep before I walked into
the stadium. The one NFL game I went to, those prices were astronomically higher than any college game that I've went to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still expensive. You go to an OU game in Norman, or you go to the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, it's going to be expensive. But
yeah,
three drinks, $80, that's, you can't afford that.
That's crazy, man. I'm telling you.
That's too much.
That was with a tip. I mean, if that makes it sound any better. Without the tip, it would have been like $68. So that, I mean, without the tip, that's still a lot of fucking money.
That's still a lot of money. That's a NFL.
I can pay two gas bills with $68.
Bro, they make so much money as it is. Like, make it affordable for the common folk to enjoy the games and go to the games. Like,
you're a $9 billion franchise.
You want your brand to grow and the audience to grow. Make it affordable so a dad can take his son.
Right.
Make it affordable so an entire family can go to a game on a Sunday that maybe live in the Dallas area.
And that's one thing that I noticed, too, also in the stadium. I didn't see not one kid.
Mm-hmm. they're
weren't very many kids there. Like, it was kind of odd to me. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you go to a baseball, like, if you go to a Rangers game, you're going to see a ton of families. At the Cowboys game, nah.
And that's the thing. Nah. Like, this is a sport that's built on families that watch this game together, that have for generations, with grandparents, uncles, aunts, siblings. Like, it's a investment by most families. And why not make it affordable so they can enjoy it, and their kids can enjoy it, and their kids can enjoy it, and generations down the road can kind of keep the tradition going? But there's no solid foundation for a tradition to even exist with how high prices are. I mean, ticket prices at nosebleed are like $200 to $300 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous, man. I hate it.
Yeah, I think Donnie told me that he pays. So he's got four seats in that section that we were in. He pays like $10,000 a year for those four seats. So that averages about $300 per seat, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, But yeah, I mean, that's what happens whenever you know your football franchise is ran by a fucking oil tycoon. I mean,
right?
Oil tycoons are fucking greedy. Name me one oil tycoon that's not fucking greedy with money when it comes to money, you know?
But I mean, even if you go to a Browns game, I'm sure it's expensive as hell in Cleveland too, even though they suck ass, you know?
I bet you if I go to a Carolina Panthers game, it's going to be cheap.
I don't know, man. It's insane. I'd rather stay home.
Last year, they were selling tickets to the game for like $14, the Carolina Panthers, because they were so fucking bad.
And that's a rare situation, you know.
They were trying
that
to get
won't
people,
happen often.
They were trying to get people to come to the fucking games because they were so bad. I mean, the Cowboys have been bad for the last 30 years. Why? You still have them high ass prices. That's crazy.
We've had like 6 or 7 good seasons in there, you know, like 4 playoff wins. But hey,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, it's insane, and I hope that one day, and maybe in our lifetime, they'll make things more affordable. But that is one thing that should change as a fan and experiencing a game, because you can only do it like once every couple years unless you make a shitload of money,
yeah.
You have a ton of disposable income,
which that's
not a high percentage of the population in America.
I'm just really glad that I went with a guy like Donnie, because – number one, he grew up in Fort Worth, right? Number two, he's a business owner, so he knows a lot of people. He's got a lot of connections. If we wouldn't have gone with him, we would have been fucked. Like he knows people that work at the stadium, that all he's got to do is just send them a text and say, hey, come pick me up at my tailgate spot.
Oh, shit.
And they'll do it. They'll fucking, they came in their little fucking golf cart and picked us up and dropped us off right in front of the front fucking door of the stadium.
That's a huge perk.
Like, you know, yeah. Like he's one of those people that he's that guy that knows a guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just thank God that he was with us, because he's he knows the area. He knows the stadium. It didn't even take us a long time to leave the game. Like it was a good experience, and shout out to Donnie and Gina for hooking us up with tickets, and also shout out to my sister
next time
because it was all because I'd been wanting to go to this game since the beginning of the year when they announced the opponents, and then whenever they dropped the schedule in May, I was like, I gotta go, but I couldn't find no one to commit. My sister, she's a big Cowboys fan, and she committed with me, and she had that hookup, and we made
it
happen.
I'm glad you guys had a good time. Did it diminish your enjoyment at all because of the outcome of the score?
No, not really. I mean, I would, and it's crazy because I was telling this to my sister too, because you know. The Packers have always been my number one team, right? But I still root for the Cowboys,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think we've mentioned this in one of the other podcasts.
Yeah.
When I'm not watching the Packers, I'm watching the Cowboys, right? And I root for the Cowboys to win. I really do. And then, of course, I have a little soft spot for the Chiefs, right? But I just found it fitting that I went to a Packers Cowboys game and there was no winner or loser.
You know, I didn't
and
think
it was
of
a
that.
Tie because
I didn't think about that because
I like both teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love my Packers, but I like the Cowboys.
Yeah,
and it's like I found it very odd and it literally went to the last fucking second. Literally to the last second, they played to the last. I got free football going to a Packers Cowboys game. It went to the last second.
That is
and
cool.
There was no winner, no loser. And yeah. I found that to be
fitting.
It was like
poetic.
It was like God yeah. was saying, Adrian, you're not gonna be upset regardless because neither one of these teams are gonna win or lose.
Right.
You know, so
it's
I thought
cool,
it was cool.
To be a part of that club who went to a NFL game that ended in a tie, because it doesn't happen.
They're very rare, yeah.
It doesn't happen as often as it used to back in the day.
And it's technically, so both games, both NFL games that I've been to were history making. So with this Packers Cowboys game, it was the highest scoring game that ever ended in a tie in NFL history.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. Right.
So I got to see that. I got to be there for that.
Yeah.
When I went to the Packers Chiefs game, I got to see Aaron Rodgers throw his 100th touchdown pass. And I think it was some kind of, there was some kind of record there, because Green Bay had won the Super Bowl just the year before. And then that year that they were going, they went into Arrowhead undefeated. Right, they were 13-0.
Yeah.
Or 14-0, something like that. 13, I think it was 13-0. So they were undefeated. Right, all they had to do was win three more games, I think, to tie the Dolphins, right? For having that undefeated season.
Yeah, undefeated season, 17-0 Dolphins, 1972. Yeah. Yep.
So they were 13-0. And then they lost to a Chiefs team that had only won five games up until that point.
That's how it always happens.
And so it was like, it was like there was like some kind of record for that. Like,
yeah.
And so it was cool to be a part of both of those games, and it was definitely cool to be a part of this game here, because it was watching two offenses just tearing it up. It was back and forth. The Cowboys would score, and then we would come back. It was fitting that
Micah Parsons ankle tackles Dak on Dak's way into the end zone,
yeah,
only to fall short to force the field goal. That was pretty cool.
And it's crazy that they actually credited him with the sack, because Dak took off and ran.
Yeah.
He took off and ran. He ran for more than a yard, for sure.
Oh, I thought for sure he was going to get in. And then I see
Parsons. Oh, he would have gotten in without that tackle. That would have been game over right there, for sure. Game over.
But I like Micah, but you know, he's obviously an enemy now. It was pretty cool to see the game in that way for both teams, because I know he wanted to win it and justify, you know, the move to Green Bay, and Dallas wanted to win it to justify moving on from Micah.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll play again in the playoffs. Who knows?
I just want to say that Green Bay,
if we can get our shit together,
I just want to say
defensively,
that Green Bay is still undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
In AT&T Stadium since it opened. I just want to throw that out there.
Oh, the year that we scored and there's like a minute left and Rodgers
throws the ball down the field on the sideline.
Oh, still hurts. But yeah, I'm glad that you had a good time. Next time, let's go together. Let's plan it out, because I'd like to go to another NFL game. It's been a minute. Been over 10 years, so.
Yeah, I definitely have to do it again. Yeah, it was definitely an experience. Definitely an experience I'll remember forever. An experience that I'm definitely grateful for. Yeah, it was something else, man. It really was.
I thought it was a very cool ending, and I didn't tie it together because I knew you were not really a Cowboys fan, but you rooted for them. You've got a lot of family members that are Cowboys fans.
Yeah.
And until you said that, it didn't dawn on me, like, yeah, that is a fitting ending for you. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The next game I'm thinking about going to is the OU-LSU game at the end of the year. I'm hoping we can make that happen. My buddy from South Carolina that I became friends with, that I bought season tickets from, about 6 years ago. We've been super close since then, and
it's at Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's in Norman, and you know, it's probably going to be cold weather, last game of the season, but we haven't beat LSU, I think, in like 50 years. It's been a long time, so I want to go to that game. That game may be, if you win it, you go to the playoffs. So that's the next one that's on my radar for this year, and I hadn't been to a game in Norman since 2021. I've been down there for a couple football camps since then, but yeah, I want to get down there and get to a game, because this could be a special year. We'll have to just wait and see I know we haven't done this in a while. It's been since August, so we hadn't had a chance to even give any recaps or anything over any football, but it's been a fun season so far. We're about a quarter of the way in.
Yeah, it really has. It's been a good season. Interesting season, that's for sure, for both college and the NFL. So.
For college, it doesn't really seem like there's just a clear-cut elite team out there that is a head and shoulders above everyone else.
Not really. I think if I would have to say that there is one, maybe Oregon.
Maybe Oregon, maybe Miami, maybe even Alabama. They've started playing really well. Oklahoma could be in that, you know, conversation.
I would like to say Penn State, but I just don't.
Did you see they lost today?
Did they lose today?
They lost to it
after that big win.
A winless UCLA team.
What?
Nico.
I did not see
Nico that transferred from Tennessee to UCLA as a big controversy in the offseason.
They had that big win last week. Who did they play last week? It was
Penn State played Oregon, but they lost. They lost in overtime.
They did lose to Oregon. That's right. That's right.
It's just like Franklin, their head coach, he has not been able to get over the hump with big
Penn
games.
State. Scratch Penn
State. And then
State.
Going
Never
on
mind.
The road to lose to UCLA, who's been god-awful all year. It's insane, dude.
UCLA hasn't been good since they had Troy Aikman. No. So
it's been a minute.
Since the 80s.
And they fired Foster. He's a linebacker in the NFL. Deshaun Foster. He's a terrible head coach. They fired him, so they're going to be looking for another head coach pretty soon.
Yeah.
It's just that time of the year where coaches are starting to lose their jobs because they're just not performing. I thought today Texas was going to go in and beat Florida, and Billy Napier at Florida was going to be the next one on the chopping block because he's 1-3 this year heading into the Texas game, and they needed a big win, and they got it. But he was on the verge of losing his job, and then Sam Pittman from Arkansas lost his job. He was fired. Mike Gundy from Oklahoma State was fired, which was shocking.
That's shocking. He's been there forever.
Been there for he started as an assistant there in the early 90s. I think 1990 he was like a
grad
assistant.
I was going to say he's been there for like 30 years.
He's been there for a long time. Yeah, and he's their all-time winningest head coach.
It was probably time to move on, though. Sometimes you just got to move on. Like, you know.
Losing Mac Brown. How was that for you as a fan?
It sucked, but we had to move on because, I mean, you can't just keep playing with the same old system year after year after year. And then when it's not working no more, you just can't do it. And then recruiting wise, nobody really wanted to play with Mac Brown. Mac Brown, you know, when he was at the tail end of his career, that's when you started seeing all these, and it was in the NFL too. You started seeing all these younger coaches come in, with these new styles of air raid offenses and stuff like that, you know, and that's where kids wanted to go play, was with these younger coaches that they could better relate to and, you know, had higher power offensive schemes and things of that nature. So, I mean, I feel like that's what ended up happening with Mac Brown. He just couldn't recruit any good players anymore. Like,
everything,
you know what I mean?
Runs its course with time.
Yeah.
And Mac was a great coach. There is something cool. Like, next Friday at Texas Live, Mac Brown's going to be there in Barry Switzer, and it's free to the public.
Yeah.
You can go hear them speak and talk right before the OU-Texas game. If I lived in that area, we'd be going. That'd be cool.
Barry Switzer's a character, man. After watching, and I didn't know that until watching that Dallas Cowboys documentary on Netflix. But yeah, he's a character, man.
He is, and you know what's crazy about him? He has the sharpest mind. He can recall things that were back in the 60s.
That's crazy.
As if they were.
That's crazy, especially for somebody that's 80 something years old. You know, because usually that's when you start getting like dementia and shit.
Right.
You know?
he's known around Oklahoma as the king. And he is very, very witty, very smart, very he can recall things and remember things. It's crazy. Like, you don't find very many elderly people that can remember a lot. I can't even remember a lot that happened, you know, even a week ago.
I can't even remember where the fuck I put my wallet. Shit, where's it at?
Right. Oh, man. And we're in October now. Can you believe it's already October?
I know, it's crazy. My favorite month of the year, though.
Oh, it's, yeah, the birthday month. It's my favorite month of the year, too. I don't have any birthdays in October, but I do have my favorite holiday, Halloween, favorite time of the year. And, you know, it's in the thick of football season, so I'm looking forward to it. We've got Halloween on a Friday this year.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
My birthday is finally on a weekend instead of a weekday. It's been on a weekday the last, like, 5 years.
Well, we're doing something,
four
right?
4 or 5 years. I'll be out of town. Yeah, I'm leaving down south on the 16th. So we can do something when I get back, though.
Okay. One thing that I have seen on social media lately that we could do involving, you know, Halloween, the fall, it's through the Amarillo Visit app. So I saw this on Instagram. A friend of mine sent it to me. It's Visit Amarillo. You download the app. It's the app, the two boots, you know, mm-hmm. the logo that you see everywhere. And you can go to the widget at the top left-hand corner and click on challenges. And you can go to a page that says Amarillo After Dark Self-Guided Haunted Tour. And so there's like 7-8 places on here that you can go to.
Fuck it, let's go to Summit Elementary.
I've always wanted to do like a fun haunted tour. So you go to, like, R&R is on there. So you go to R&R, you check in. And one thing I didn't know about R&R, it used to be a Pizza Hut. Did you know that?
You can tell by the building that it used to be some kind of restaurant. I didn't know it was specifically a Pizza Hut, but.
And but yeah. There was a an infamous murder there in the 70s. Did you know that?
Yeah, I read that article that you sent me. Yeah. But I didn't know about it until you sent
me. I didn't know about it either. I didn't even know it was a Pizza Hut at one point. But I guess you go to these places and you can check in, and there's specific things you do inside the establishment, and kind of like a, I don't know if it's like a scavenger hunt, but the Gnat is on there, which is cool. The Big Texan, Amarillo Scare Grounds, the cemetery, the Llano Cemetery, Golden Light Cafe, and a place called Antiques, Books, and Curiosities. So this would be something fun to do. I don't know. Get out of the house one night, have some drinks, and go do some haunted tours.
We can just walk through the fucking hood, bro, right? For free. Let's just go walk through San Jacinto at night.
I want to go. My youngest son's been asking me if we could find a haunted escape room. I'm like, I don't know if there's any like haunted themed escape rooms.
There's one in Plainview.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called, what is it called? It's called the Black Something.
I was thinking there might be one. We've done an escape room at the old tire factory on 10th Street downtown. Maybe they might have a Halloween one there, a Halloween themed one. So that's one thing we want to do this month.
It's called the Blackness.
The Blackness. Get blacked.
I drive by it all the time. I go to Plainview for work. It's right there. It's right there off of Date Street, I believe, which is one of the main streets in Plainview. It's off of the main road, which is 6th Street, in Date, and it looks like an old high school gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's got this big writing on it called the Blackness, and I've heard that it was supposedly, it's a haunted house in a haunted building. So, and it's supposed to be pretty popular, so.
Wonder if it's any good. I know there's one outside of Amarillo called the Trap House. Have you driven down I-27 and seen it? Yeah, I survived the Trap House.
I grew up around Trap Houses, bro.
Right, both of us have. Shit. I mean, just go to the Heights.
Trap Trailers is what I should say.
Go to the Heights on a Saturday night. And
Paradise Hills.
You will experience everything you want to experience. I want to go to that Sixth Street Massacre haunted house. I hear that one's pretty good.
I've got a... It's actually crazy that you're talking about haunted houses right now, because one of my coworkers at the prison, apparently he works in a haunted house. He works at the Amarillo Scare Grounds. And he was asking me, he was like, "Hey, do you like haunted houses?" Because I think he was trying to give me some tickets. He was like, "Do you like haunted houses?" And I was like, "Nah, man, I'm too old for that shit, you know? I don't got no kids, no nothing like that." I was like, I'm not interested in that stuff. But maybe I can hit him up and then get some tickets.
Do it.
For you.
You know how expensive it is.
You and your kids can go.
I do. I want to take them. I don't know if all of them would want to go, but I know at least one or two might. So
yeah, he's at the Scare Grounds off of 10th.
Okay.
The Scare Grounds.
So did they actually have a haunted house there?
I want to say it's like multiple haunted houses, but okay. I'm not sure, because they do it at the fairgrounds. That's why they call it the Scare Grounds. So it's like, I don't know if it's like multiple different haunted houses.
So it's right there, like
by
the burger,
or like it's a big maze, or
Burger Barrel restaurant that's been there since the 50s. It's like right down there on 10th Street. Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I hadn't been to one since maybe I was in my 20s.
I've never been to one.
There was one downtown in like an old meat factory. That one was pretty scary. And we went down like in an old freight elevator. It just smelled old. It had been abandoned for years. That one was pretty,
I guess it is
pretty spooky for sure.
I guess it is just one big haunted house. But yeah, it's next to the Burger Barrel.
Yeah, if you can give me some tickets, shoot, let me know. Because I like to fully immerse myself into Halloween and the spooky seasons. So anything and everything that I can do, like last year I went back and started to watch old horror movies that I had never seen. Like Rosemary's Baby, Psycho. I never seen a lot of those because growing up, I was not a horror fan. I was not a horror fan growing up. I hated scary movies, but now that I'm older, I love them.
Bro, I just binge watched the new season of Monster with Ed Gein.
That's what I've started last night. I'm two episodes in.
It is freaking awesome.
It is. It's really good. Awesome.
It's really good. I mean, the first two episodes don't do it justice. It's when it gets further into the movie, you'll enjoy it even more. Especially when it gets to the episodes where it starts referencing a lot of the movies that Ed Gein inspired, like Psycho, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill, and Silence of the Lambs. It gets really, really interesting, and it's very entertaining. Especially if you like those three movies, right?
Yeah.
Which those three movies are very iconic in the horror genre. So, it's.
I've known about the Ed Gein story since I was in high school, because one time I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and there was an option to watch the hidden credits, the hidden scenes, the hidden info of the movie, and there was one where you could watch the inspiration of the movie, and it went into the story of Ed Gein, and I was like, there's no way this is real, and researched it a little bit more, and turns out everything was authentic. It was real, and that really did happen with him, and you know, exhuming bodies and wearing skin and making lamps and furniture and fixtures out of human body parts. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah,
I attribute it a lot to his mother. What do you think? I think his mother fucked him up in the head pretty bad.
I think, I think she did. And for whatever reason, he was obsessed with her. And I don't know why. You know what I mean? Like, and Laurie Metcalf, the actress that plays his mom in this season, man, I hope she wins a fucking Golden Globe Primetime Emmy, whatever award there are for TV shows, SAG Award, whatever, because she is freaking awesome as the mom. She's a great actress. Charlie Hunnam, I thought, did a really good job too. Great acting. Ryan Murphy, man, like he never fails. Like, he's always putting out good stuff. I've been a big fan of American Horror Story. He produces that too. The Dahmer, the Munster season with Jeffrey Dahmer, I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know if this Ed Gein one is better than that one. I think the Dahmer one was better.
No, I hadn't finished the Ed one, but I think it's on track to be better or just as good, in my opinion. How many episodes are you in?
It's definitely... I finished it. Mm-hmm. I finished it. I started it. Don't spoil anything for me. I started it last night whenever I got home.
I did too.
And then I finished it this morning. I finished it this morning.
Okay. So, I want to watch another episode tonight. At least one or two. But I'm into that kind of shit, like the true crime, the morbid horror stuff. Like, I never would have thought I would be into that later in life, but I am.
I wasn't a big fan of the Menendez brothers one. I thought that one was kind of...
I didn't finish that one.
Weak.
One you need to watch, which is just a documentary, is the Yogurt Shop Murders.
I saw that one.
And did you hear
the one
last week?
Austin, yeah.
Did you hear last week the news regarding the murders?
No.
They solved it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
They solved it through DNA, through the documentary.
And
ballistics. DNA yeah. and ballistics. Serial killer killed them.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Sense. It's just fascinating that these things have happened and people have gotten away with a lot of things. I mean, this day and age, the likelihood of you getting away with anything in regards to... you know, any crime, it's very low. But back then, DNA wasn't advanced enough to catch you, you know? All right, let's transition to something on the morbid wavelength. Since we've already opened Pandora's box with the Ed Gein story, let's talk about some serial killer movies that we enjoy. Maybe our Mount Rushmore. How does that sound?
Yeah, let's fucking do it.
Because there are plenty to choose from. There are probably some that I haven't seen, too, that you were going to mention that I need to watch. So what do you think? I'll let you go first. What are your four top serial killer movies?
Well, number one's got to be Silence of the Lambs. I mean, number one's definitely got to be Silence of the Lambs with Buffalo Bill.
Yep.
Technically, you have two serial killers, technically, in the movie. You have Buffalo Bill, and then you have... Hannibal Lecter,
right,
who's helping the FBI mm-hmm. find this other serial killer, which happened a lot in the 70s. The FBI would go to these prisons and visit with these serial killers to try to learn more about their psyche, you know what I'm saying, to try to find these other serial killers. So I would say Silence of the Lambs is definitely number one for me.
And you don't have to rank them in any particular order, but just
oh
top
yeah,
four.
just the Mount yeah, Rushmore. Mount Rushmore. Yeah, Silence of the Lambs definitely have to be up there. I would say Seven has to be up there too, mm-hmm. with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman. That one's got one of the crazier endings in it, right? With the head in the box. So Seven's definitely got to be up there. Definitely one of my favorites. American Psycho's got to be up there too. Also, best 80s soundtrack of all time, American Psycho. I just wanted to throw that out there too. But yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite serial killer movies. And number four would probably be Munster, about Eileen Wuornos, Charlize Theron. She was really, really good in that movie. I mean... she was so good that she won an Oscar for it. So, but that one was a really good movie. Great writing, great acting. So yeah, I would say that would be my Mount Rushmore of serial killers.
So out of those four, which one would you turn on now? Like as a like a guilty pleasure that you wouldn't mind watching like every day of your entire life?
Any one of them, honestly, but probably American Psycho, just because of it's kind of got that like black humor about it, but also has that amazing soundtrack. So probably American Psycho.
Okay.
Like Seven is one of those movies that's like, it's almost kind of hard to watch. Like, it's not a movie that you could, like, you'd have to be fucking demented to watch that movie every freaking day. You know what I mean? God, I can't count the times. I can't count how many times I've seen Silence of the Lambs.
Such a good movie.
It is. It's a classic. Classic. Anthony Hopkins, such a great actor. Probably one of the greatest actors of our time, man.
You know, as a kid growing up, we'd go to Homeland a lot to rent movies. Mm-hmm. And I know you know about Homeland.
We did too, yeah.
There'd be so many times I would just stare at all of the cover art of the VHS tapes, and I'd see that butterfly, and I always thought to myself, what is this movie about?
Yeah.
It always sparked my interest and curiosity. I always wanted to watch that movie, and whenever I became, you know, a teenager, I heard about it, and I was a little apprehensive because I wasn't into horror back then. But as an adult, I was probably in my early 30s when I first watched Silence of the Lambs. I turned it on. I was like, I'm finally going to watch this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you got any more? Any more like honorable mentions or anything else?
An honorable mention.
Okay.
Maybe Copycat. I think Copycat was good too, with Sigourney Weaver. That came out around the same time that Seven came out. But Copycat was really good as well. So I'd probably give that one an honorable mention. Copycat.
And you're going to kill me cause I've never seen Seven. I've heard you need about to watch the film, it. But I've never seen it.
And now's a good time to watch it. Cause you know, now it's going to be on all the streaming services because it comes out every on streaming during Halloween time. So, and knowing you, you would love it. And I think
okay, you, I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna watch it for sure.
You definitely need to watch it for sure.
Okay, so I'll start with my honorable mention first, and this is a fictional movie, and kind of likes paranormal at the same time. Candyman.
Candyman's good.
Candyman. When I watched Candyman for the first time, I got sick to my stomach.
That's a very classic slasher movie. Yeah. Very classic slasher.
And it fits in the category, but it's not necessarily like a, you know, a well-known like serial killer, so to speak. But he went around killing people, and he was... I feel like that's a forgotten movie,
mm-hmm,
in that genre. People don't mention it enough, and I think it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the actor's name who plays Candyman. Do you?
Tony Todd. R.I.P.
He's a great actor. I thought he did phenomenal in that movie. And that movie just scared the shit out of me. Like, even as an adult, go back and watch it, and it's... Man, it sends goosebumps down my spine. It's one you need to watch if you haven't seen.
That one and Hellraiser are like those old 80s, 90s classic horror movies that still kind of like give you nightmares.
Yes.
When you go to bed.
Absolutely.
Even as an adult.
Absolutely. I still have those moments after I watch a scary movie and I get super frightened and have to have the lights turned on. It's just human nature. But I'll move into my top four. I won't rank these in any specific order, but the first one I'll mention is Natural Born Killers, which... It's kind of like a Bonnie and Clyde tale. I love the storyline. They are serial killers. They go around killing whoever along their way, you know, running from the police. And that movie is so trippy, the way it's filmed and the way that the imagery and everything is crazy. I feel like it was really innovative for its time, too. It kind of reminded me of Fear of Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of like trippy psychedelic scenes that are real far out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of those, just like Fear and Loathing, like the characters are pretty much high the whole time. So it's, in a sense, trying to give the viewers how it feels to be high like the characters are in the movie, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like that. So yeah, that, and Natural Born Killers is also another one of those movies. It's like, for me, like I could probably only watch like once or twice just because it's so,
it's so out there.
So out there and so deep and gory and yeah.
But it's a good watch if you've never seen it and you're into the genre. You've got to give it a try because it's one of those that will stick in your mind for a long time.
Yeah.
Their delusional concept of love and their ruthlessness, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And there's a cool scene in there where they marry each other on the bridge. I've been across that bridge. It's in right outside of Taos. It's a Rio Grande Gorge Bridge. And I don't know if you know this, but it's also called the Suicide Bridge. There's been 10 suicides this year on that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
It's well known for people to commit suicide there.
To jump off of it.
Jump off. Yeah. Every year there's probably over 20 to 30 suicides. It's insane. Yeah. And they've closed it since the last one occurred a few weeks ago. They need to put railing up because it's just like a 4 foot tall support railing. Easy to get over. They need to have one where it goes like 8 foot and then it kind of curves.
Yeah.
So people can't easily access, but they'll find a way. But yeah, that's an interesting scene that sticks out in my mind. But that's my first one that I'll mention. The next one is one that's like lingered in my mind because I get to the point where I try to solve these murders. If it's like, if there's not a well-known, you know, ending to the case, like I get so triggered on trying to figure out who did what, why did it happen this way, who might be the perpetrator. And this movie is, it goes hand in hand with how I feel. And it's Zodiac.
Zodiac's good.
Zodiac Killer. That case is just mind boggling. It's baffling. I think it's Arthur Lee Allen who they suspected was the killer. He died in the early 90s. That one sparks my interest every time I dive into it. And the movie's really good. Isn't Jake Gyllenhaal in it?
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. Mark Ruffalo's in it. Robert Downey Jr., I think, is in it as well.
Infamous murder, kind of similar to the Son of Sam murders in the 70s, too, in New York.
Yeah.
But the Zodiac movie, it will leave you wanting to do your own research to figure out who the killer is. And if any of the suspects that they've investigated over the years could be the killer. But it's just mind-boggling that all of those events transpired and they never made an arrest. And he gave them puzzles, cryptid puzzles and clues, and the case was never solved officially. So that's another one that I'll watch any time, and I've watched a dozen times already, but I would highly recommend, if you haven't seen Zodiac, go rent it. It's everywhere. You can get it probably on any streaming platform. The next one is Silence of the Lambs, and I'll go back to what I said before, just being interested in the film based on the cover art of the VHS tape. That film has always been one of my favorites to go to, and I have to put it on my Mount Rushmore because the story's so good.
Yeah.
And the way it goes back and forth, Buffalo Bill is iconic. There's a lot of iconic scenes in that movie. But it's definitely one of those that you can rewatch. And you'll discover new things each time you watch, right? The Hannibal Lecter character is timeless. You know, you see tons of spinoffs. Like, how many spinoffs have they made? Like, they made the Hannibal movies.
So after after Silence of the Lambs, there was Hannibal, then there was Red Dragon, right? Which Red Dragon is technically a prequel before Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
So Red Dragon, yeah, so Red Dragon, that's the one with Ed Norton. So that one's a prequel, whereas Hannibal is a sequel, right? Then they also made a TV series called Hannibal, but I never watched that. I don't think it lasted very long, maybe like one or two seasons, but I don't really remember. And I don't know what it all entailed, but I know there was a TV series. And then there was the prequel and the sequel. I don't know what else has been. You know what? I think there was a series based on Clarice when she's like first starting off in the FBI. So before she ever gets to Hannibal Lecter. But I don't remember what it was called. And I don't think it lasted very long either.
Yeah, I just knew there were some spinoffs made.
Yeah. There's been at least two TV series made, and there was, of course, a sequel and a prequel to the movie made.
Got you.
So,
yeah, it's a heavy hitter in the serial killer movie world. I love the movie. It's just great from beginning to end. So that's definitely on there. And then my final one, I'll have to go with Psycho, the original Psycho.
A lot of people say the second one is better. I've never seen the second one.
I haven't seen the second one. The original, black and white.
Like, I know Quentin Tarantino, he's said in numerous interviews, you know, because a lot of people, you know, the notion is the sequels are never better than the first, right? But Quentin Tarantino says that the Psycho 2 is one of those sequels that's actually better than the first. And the second one, I think, came out in the early 80s. So it was like way after the first one came out.
Yeah, the first one came out in 1960, I believe.
Yeah, and the sequel came out in like 1981 or 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And Quentin Tarantino says it's better than the first, and that Anthony Perkins is like his best acting role of all time. So I'm going to have to maybe try and find Psycho 2 and try to watch that, because I haven't seen it, and I'd like to see what the hype is about.
Yeah, I need to watch it too. And like we've mentioned before, Psycho's basically inspired from the Ed Gein story.
Did you know that the chick from the first Psycho, Janet Lee, she's Jamie Lee Curtis's mother?
Really? Her name is Marlon in the first Psycho. She gets murdered in the shower.
Yeah, she's the one that gets murdered in the shower.
Yeah.
That's Jamie Lee Curtis's mother.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not. That's pretty cool.
It's a fun fact, because she started off as like what they would call a scream queen, right? And then her daughter ends up, so she's in a very iconic horror film with Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And then her daughter's first film role is in another iconic classic horror film with Halloween.
I didn't know that. Or maybe her name's Marion. In the film, I can't
Marion.
Remember.
It should be Marion, I think.
I don't know, I'm thinking Marlon.
But the actress's name is Janet Lee.
And Alfred Hitchcock, his movies are great. Birds.
And
I remember going back and watching Birds last year.
And he's featured in that Ed Gein story. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. I love how they go back and forth.
Yeah.
And I'm only two episodes in, and man, it's really cool. The directing, the production, it's top notch.
Yeah, like I said, man, Ryan Murphy, he never misses. Everything he produces, everything that he puts out is usually top notch.
But Psycho is just such a classic, and it's timeless, and it's a movie that so many other movies are inspired by. So it has to be on my Mount Rushmore, because it's an integral part of that genre.
It's the standard of what horror movies need to be like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, and it's crazy because again, like I said, Alfred Hitchcock is in the series with Ed Gein, and it shows a scene where they're like at a premiere for Psycho, and like people are like having to walk out of the theater and stuff. Yeah. You know, when I watch Psycho now, it's not really scary, right? Because it's such an old movie.
But I will say, like, in the Ed Gein story, when they show that scene in Psycho, they show it as if you're standing right there watching it happen, which is crazy. I was like, this is super in your face and real.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
And to see like people pass out, faint, storm out of the movie theater, throw up. I could see that happening back then. Because it really like pushed the boundary and towed the line.
There wasn't anything like that.
No, there wasn't. Then. And Alfred's just looking through the crack of the door, witnessing everybody freak out. That's pretty cool. Like to be that innovative back then and to push the boundaries and the lines, it's crazy. Like Roman Polanski and Rosemary's Baby. I love that movie too.
Alfred Hitchcock was one of a kind. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
What other... Do you like Roman Polanski?
Chinatown is really good. Rosemary's Baby is really good. He was a good director. For sure. The Pianist is really good.
And then he's connected to, you know...
It's just he can't come to the United States because, you know, he's a fucking sex offender and shit. So.
He's connected to the Charles Manson murders.
Yeah,
Sharon
Tate. He was married or going to be married to Sharon
Tate.
But
he was overseas.
They were filming Rosemary's Baby when it happened.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane. To like be a famous like producer and filmmaker and you're connected to one of the most infamous crimes in U.S. history. That is insane.
You seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I've seen bits and pieces, but I've heard it's a great movie.
If you watch that whole thing, the movie is based around the Tate LaBlanca murders. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting for sure. But yeah, he's definitely in that movie.
Do you think that movie itself could push for a Mount Rushmore spot or honorable mention? In your mind?
What, Rosemary's Baby?
No, the Once Upon a Time.
In Hollywood? A Mount Rushmore of what?
Like, just serial killer-themed movies? Because it's...
Well, I mean, that movie's not really about serial killers. It's more... It's set during a time when all that stuff was happening, but it's really more about...
It doesn't focus
actors,
in on the actual...
It's really more about actors trying to stay relevant, right? But, I mean, it's a great movie, but I wouldn't consider it necessarily a serial killer movie. They're supposed to be making a sequel.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth.
I need to watch the whole movie because I hadn't seen it from beginning to end. But yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there. And let's find one maybe that we hadn't seen, either of us have seen.
As far as serial killer movies?
Yeah. Henry?
Henry.
I haven't seen Henry. So.
What is that about?
Henry is released from prison following his mother's murder. He supplements his job as an exterminator with a series of indiscriminate and violent murders. Fellow jailbird and drug dealer Otis becomes a willing accomplice in Henry's bloody killings. But as escalates, Henry forms a bond with Otis's sister, Becky. Things start to get out of hand. The film is based on a true life story of serial killer Henry Lee Lucas. It's got an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7 out of 10. Yeah, IMDb. So, Henry. I've never heard of this one. Hadn't seen it.
Henry Lee Lucas was the confession killer.
Yeah, the one that confessed like hundreds of murders, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he like prison in Texas at one point?
Have you seen the Texas Killing Fields? That's a good one,
I've
too.
I've seen that one. I guess Henry would have to be on that list. And I'm sure, who'd you say the director was of the Ed Gein and Dahmer series?
Well, he's not the director. He's a producer. Ryan Murphy. He
produced both.
He's produced all of the Munster seasons. Uh-huh. He also produced American Crime Story, the O.J. Simpson one.
Those are all good.
He did American Sports Story, the one about Aaron Hernandez.
That's good.
He also did Pose, all of the American Horror Stories. And he also did Glee. He's a producer on Glee. He's done a lot.
I'll guess that the next one, serial killer story that he does is probably like John Wayne Gacy.
Possibly.
I could see that one. He didn't do Night Stalker, did he? Richard Ramirez.
Well, Night Stalker.
That's not a monster one.
He's been in a couple of American Horror Story seasons. He was in the hotel season because American Horror Story Hotel, which is like season 5, is based on the the Cecil Hotel in LA where Richard Ramirez stayed at for a little bit. So
and that's where that Asian girl disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she didn't disappear. They found her in the water tank. Yeah.
But they're like puzzled as to how she ended up in there.
Yeah, and there's those videos of her wandering around and all acting weird in the elevator and shit. Yeah.
And that hotel is super haunted from what I heard. That's connected to like the Black Dahlia murder from what I heard.
That's another good movie too, The Black Dahlia.
Yeah,
it's got Josh Hartnett in it. I think that one's a good one.
They used to say I looked like him back in the
Josh Hartnett. Yeah. He's in a decent serial killer movie. Have you seen Trap?
Mm-mm. No.
It's decent. It's a M. Night.
You know me. I'm not a big movie buff, but
M. Night Shyamalan.
I love his movies.
It's a decent movie. And it's based on a real life, not a real life killer, but a real life situation that happened. So in the movie, he plays this serial killer that goes to this concert. And the concert ends up being a trap because they know that he's going to be at the concert. So
that's a new movie, isn't it?
All these police are there. Yeah.
Yes.
It came out last year.
Yeah. You know what? I started watching that movie the other night and I turned it off because I thought... This movie's stupid. This is far-fetched.
It's actually decent. It's not great.
Right.
But it's not horrible.
Yeah,
either.
I turned it off.
It's not horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent movie.
Now that you explain the movie, I didn't remember the title, but I don't know, man. Like, I have to watch nonfiction, like, or geared towards a true story of some kind for me to get really interested in it, because I'm the type of person that will go and research the case or the story or the facts and details and stuff. And if it's fictional, I'm not as into it. I'm just a weirdo.
Well, Trap is, like I said, it's not based on a real killer, but it's based on a real situation that happened like back in the 80s.
Okay. Maybe I need to give it another try then.
So the movie Trap is actually based on a sting operation that happened back in 1985 called Operation Flagship, which was a operation that happened in Washington, D.C., and involved several United States Marshals and the police department with Washington, D.C. They arrested 101 wanted fugitives. Basically, what they did was they sent an invitation by a fictitious television company, which was called Flagship International Sports Television, where they could claim... which said that they could claim 2 free tickets to watch the Washington Redskins versus the Cincinnati Bengals and also get a chance to win tickets to Super Bowl 20. So all of these fugitives showed up at the Washington Convention Center trying to, you know, get these tickets to the Super Bowl and get these tickets to watch the next Redskins game. And the police were out there unknowingly, of course, to these fugitives, and they all ended up getting arrested. So that's what the movie Trap is based on.
Okay.
So, because again, he plays a serial killer. They find out the serial killer is going to be at this concert, and so they basically just surround the entire convention center that this concert's at. And basically, the movie shows Josh Hartnett as a serial killer trying to get out without getting caught. And it's interesting. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting idea.
I'll give it another try.
It's for sure. Like I said, it's decent. It's not great. But it is a decent movie.
Yeah.
It's a little predictable, but it's decent.
Yeah,
well, it's not like other M. Night Shyamalan movies where you have like that weird twist or whatever, which there is a twist at the end. There is a twist at the end, but it's not like one of those, oh, really, this is what the fuck it is, right. You know?
It's not so a big letdown.
Yeah, it's. I thought it was good. I actually went and saw it in theaters because I was excited for it.
My favorite movie of his is Signs, and it always will be.
The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, that one's good, too.
Unbreakable's good, too. I haven't seen Split. I need to see Split.
Everyone used to say I'd look like Haley Joel Osment growing up as well.
So. Yeah, I can fucking see it.
Fuck. Just one after another. But yeah, that the Sixth
if
Sense
you
is
were,
great.
If you were fucking clean-shaven right now, you'd probably fucking look
when
like
when I was younger, you should have seen me when I was younger. Yeah, I did look like him. Had the chili bowl and everything.
Yeah, there's a picture right there of you.
yeah, I didn't quite have a chili bowl in that one, but it's almost there.
That's that
Tequatchi haircut.
That's that Abercrombie and Fitch fucking
right. Yeah, that was
haircut.
That was the peak of the American Eagle, Abercrombie and Fitch days.
Hollister.
The polos, the shell necklaces, the
did
cargo
you,
shorts.
Did you wear your collar up?
I didn't do that. But I would shop at American Eagle all the time, and I'd wear, you know, white lids hat. A college, you know, had a, you know, white hatter. I was just want to be prep back then. And, you know, it's funny because before that I was skater. I was straight up, you know, wanted to be a skateboarder throughout middle school. And I was, you know, in athletics. I was a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I'm a modge podge of whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, we've got some movies to watch. I want to watch Seven. It's called Seven, right?
Yep.
And then, both of us need to find Henry. I don't know where that's going to be streaming on, but we'll find it, and we'll try to watch that one.
I got a bootleg app.
Yeah, you do. All right. Well, this has been episode 160. Hopefully, we bring you another one soon. Hope we don't wait a month.
Hell yeah.